Well, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Islamic State defenders in Fallujah launched a counterattack in the southern part of the western Iraqi city, reportedly blunting an assault to retake Fallujah, captured by IS fighters 2.5 years ago. Iraq's counterterrorism service has been joined by regular army units, Sunni tribesmen, and Shia militia, backed by airstrikes in the offensive launched early this week. The fierce fight has raised the alarm among international and humanitarian groups about the fate of an estimated 50,000 civilians trapped inside. Lisa Grand is the deputy special representative of the UN Assistance Mission for Iraq.
Families that are still stuck in Fallujah right now, they are at extreme grave risk from artillery and from crossfire. We also are receiving very credible reports that families are being concentrated and forced into the center of the city by Daesh, and they're not allowed to leave these concentration points. And that would suggest that Daesh could be using them or may intend to use them as some kind of a human shield.
Capture of Fallujah is seen as crucial in defeating the IS group in Iraq and restoring security to Iraq's capital, Baghdad, a frequent target of suicide attacks and car bombings. The leader of Western Sahara's Polisario Front independence movement, Mohamed Abdelaziz, has died after more than 3 decades of struggle with Morocco over the future of the former Spanish territory. He was said to be in his late 60s and reportedly suffered from a long-standing illness. The Algerian government declared a week of mourning. Abdelaziz's death comes as Morocco, which annexed the territory after the Spanish left in 1975, expelled UN peacekeepers following a reference by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to Rabat's occupation of Western Sahara. Abdelaziz launched an armed struggle against Morocco. This is VOA News. The UN Refugee Agency Tuesday said more than 2,500 people have died trying to make the dangerous crossing from North Africa to Europe so far this year. That's about 600 more than the same pace last year at this time. Nearly 900 perished just in the past week in often unseaworthy vessels operated by smugglers out of Libya. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler said UN authorities are trying to better understand reasons behind the dramatic uptick in the migration.
According to survivors, smuggler hubs operating in locations including Niger remain active in feeding people from West Africa through to Libya, where many remain for many months before being put onto boats for the crossing to Europe.
More than 200,000 made it to Europe escaping poverty and war in Africa, the Middle East, and South Asia since January. That's more than double the number who made the attempt during the same period in 2015. In Syria, the Observatory of Human Rights says at least 23 people, including 7 children, were killed by airstrikes late Monday in rebel-held Idlib. The Britain-based rights group said Russian planes carried out the strikes, although Moscow denies it. The observatory said the strikes hit several targets, including one near a hospital. It says the death toll could rise with a number of critically wounded. Meanwhile, a multinational effort in concert with the World Food Program to airdrop food and medicine to thousands of Syrians and besieged communities begins in earnest Wednesday. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
The humanitarian assistance is still not flowing satisfactorily. We're still seeing obstructions put up by the regime to the delivery of food and water and medicine and supplies. And so I think it's safe to assume that come tomorrow, the ISSG will start preparing for the necessity of airdrops and air bridges. We would expect the regime to facilitate or not interfere with those steps.
The airdrops was a plan announced last month by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, a meeting of the International Syria Support Group, and involves 13 designated areas where government and rebel forces block land deliveries. The World Health Organization has urged sexually active people returning from areas where the Zika virus is prevalent to practice abstinence or safe sex protocols for at least 8 weeks. Christian Lindmeier is a WHO spokesman.
People should practice safer sex or abstain for at least 8 weeks if they are returning from Zika-affected areas and don't present Zika disease symptoms. So these are for asymptomatic people, at least 8 weeks. This goes for men and women. And the previous recommendation suggested a period of at least 4 weeks. So this, we're upping from at least 4 weeks to at least 8 weeks.
The virus first detected in Brazil has also been linked to birth defects. Egypt's foreign ministry says it's investigating alleged racist remarks by its ambassador to Kenya. Kenyan diplomat Ivan Kamadi accused the unnamed Egyptian diplomat of referring to Africans as dogs and slaves during a meeting in Cairo. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, the first day of June, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's main opposition party calls for expansion into the ongoing corruption investigation.
Once you are named in the report and it's an ongoing investigation, the Congress for Democratic Change believes the proper thing to do is for certain individuals to recuse themselves from their capacities so as to allow the free dispensation of the rule of law.
Mumba Bonlu is vice chair for operations and mobilization for the Congress for Democratic Change Party. Nigeria's oil production falls as militant attacks take a toll. South Sudan's unity government is accused of denying access to peace monitors in some parts of the country. And five Zimbabwe political parties form a coalition ahead of the 2018 presidential election.
We have committed ourselves to talk with all those who say they are opposed to the current government, and we have said, let us come together.
Welshman Mbe is leader of one of the factions of the Movement for Democratic Change. Tunisia's Ennahdat Party moves to separate its religious and political activities. And crossing the Mediterranean Sea has been particularly deadly this year for migrants. Those stories plus Marco Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's main opposition party, the Congress for Democratic Change, or the CDC, is calling on all officials implicated in the ongoing alleged corruption scandal to recuse themselves from their current positions while the prosecutorial process takes its place. Mumba Molu, vice chair for operations and mobilization for the CDC, says over 300 Liberians will embark on a hunger strike beginning today, Wednesday, to drive home their point. The report by the UK-based Global Witness alleges that over $950,000 in bribes and other payments were made to top Liberian officials by the UK-based Sibel Mining Company and its Liberian lawyer, Varney Sherman. Mr. Sherman, along with House of Representatives Speaker Alex Tyler, have been indicted for bribery, criminal conspiracy, and economic sabotage. CDC Molu also calls for the expansion of the investigation to include other past official corruption allegations.
We are expecting that all those individuals named, be it the Speaker of the National Legislature, whether it's Mr. Foma Saleh at the National Security Agency, once you are named in the report and it's an ongoing investigation, the Congress for Democratic Change believes the proper thing to do is for certain individuals to recuse themselves from their capacities so as to allow the free dispensation of the rule of law. On the second front, we are also calling for the expansion and the inclusiveness of the investigative process to include other institutions of governance that are liable to the commission of widespread corrupt practices.
What are those issues that you think also need to be investigated?
Remember, there is the preponderance of evidences that exists with over 60 other reports that graphically portray individual liability for corrupt practices at different functions of government. For instance, the dilapidated National Company of Liberia, NOCA, where the president, Mr. Ramaphosa, was presiding as chairman of the board of directors. We want the NOCA investigated. We also want recent allegations involving $3 million bribery scandal involving one of the senior ministers of government, Mr. Sandolo, to also be investigated, and all those corrupt issues. So we also look to seeing government prosecuting those individuals associated with those audit reports that was done by the former Auditor General, Mr. John Molu.
You talk about those involved to recuse themselves. Are you talking about Senator Sherman and the Speaker of the House of Representatives? These people were elected by the Liberian people.
But remember now, they were not just elected by the Liberian people, but they also hold administrative national leadership portfolios in different capacities that will constitute a conflict of interest once they do not recuse themselves from those capacities. For instance, the Speaker of Parliament still has the power to preside over sections of plenaries at the legislature. You remember when the indictment was unraveled, the day after, there was a section of the National Legislature where the Speaker abrogated onto himself, and of course, assisted by some of his colleagues, the right to investigate themselves. In fact, a committee was set up, a parallel committee, that was charged with the responsibility to investigate the scenario of the bribery scandal involving Global Witness. So you cannot be liable or accused of a serious commission of crimes within the confines of the governance sector and then be the same person investigating yourself.
But a mere accusation is not guilt, is that correct?
That's why we are not asking them to resign their position. We are asking for a recusement of their offices to allow for the smooth conduct of the rule of law or the investigative process to take course. Our concern is the prevalence of a conflict of interest that would jeopardize the possibility of the free dispensation of justice that could damage the democratic credibility of the country.
So what's the purpose of this hunger strike? Are these also members of your party, or these are just ordinary Liberians who are going to go on the hunger strike?
95% of all the individual citizens assembling at the process tomorrow, which is going to be continuing through Friday, are members of the Mighty Congress for Democratic Change, who have said enough is enough, who have said we are tired of the widespread prevalence of corruption, endemic corruption at all sectors of the governance process, who have said that these individuals named in the report should recuse themselves to allow the dispensation of the rule of law, and that have decided to take desperate measures in the interest of the state to promote the interest of the Liberian economy, to promote the interest of democratic governance, so that those individuals and the international community can come to bear pressure on those individuals that are naming these reports for the dispensation of the rule of law. So it's just a part of a continuity of pressure on policymakers to do what is required to save the Liberian economy, to save the Liberian society from imminent collapse as it has been threatened.
Mumba Molu is Vice Chair for Operations and Mobilization of the Congress for Democratic Change Party of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A series of militant attacks has crippled Nigeria's oil industry, dramatically reducing production as the country stands on the brink of a recession. Analysts say President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to visit the restive oil-producing Niger Delta region this week amid the violence. Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
In a communique, a militant group calling itself the Niger Delta Avengers vowed to reduce Nigeria's economy to zero. They may be getting their wish. A series of attacks on pipelines and oil facilities claimed by the militant group has drastically reduced Nigeria's daily oil production. Gail Anderson, research director at Energy Research and Consultancy Group, Wood Mackenzie, says the attacks seem targeted specifically to hurt oil exports.
The attacks themselves have been well targeted, and they've been designed to cause maximum damage, and I think they've been quite successful in that respect.
To what degree they have damaged exports is unclear. Nigeria normally exports about 2.2 million barrels of oil per day. Anderson thinks daily production has dropped by about 560,000 barrels, about 25%. Dilapo Oni, head of energy research at Ecobank, says the drop is much greater and thinks Nigeria is now producing less than 1 million barrels per day. The economy shrank last quarter, and analysts say Nigeria will soon enter a recession. The global drop in the price of crude has also hurt the economy. Oni says Nigeria needs all the oil it can get to balance its books. The new attacks mean it simply isn't getting it.
We're not producing up to the level we need to produce. The government won't generate the amount of revenue it needs to generate from oil.
Militancy in the Niger Delta region is nothing new. A violent insurgency rocked the Delta for much of the second half of the last decade. It ended in 2009 when the government started paying off militants and offering some training programs. But the government is phasing out that program. It is unknown who exactly the Niger Delta Avengers are, or whether they are linked to the former militants. But Oni said the sophistication of the attacks, and the attackers' ability to dodge soldiers sent to guard pipelines, shows that some may have been involved in the previous insurgency.
They carry out attacks at specific times of the day where they know they are able to strike without any reprisal from the enemy.
President Buhari will travel to the Delta's Ogoni land region this week, where he will inaugurate a program to clean up oil spills that have happened in the region. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Today's Wednesday, the first day of June, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Life in Lofa County, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Five Zimbabwe opposition parties formed a coalition on Tuesday to challenge President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party in the 2018 presidential elections. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe program has details from Harare.
Tendai Biti's People's Democratic Party and ZAPU led by former ZIPRA Supremo, Tumiso Dabengwa, say they still need to consult their members before joining the coalition. Zunde leader Gilbert Dzikiti, who was appointed the first chairman of the coalition, called the Coalition of Democrats, or CORD, said the coming together of the five political parties was an important milestone in the struggle for democracy in Zimbabwe.
CORD has made a commitment to work with civil society, churches, and other stakeholders to craft and agree on a Zimbabwe that works for all of us. As CORD, we realize the need for leaders to be servants of the people.
Nwue noted that the parties that signed the agreement are keeping their doors open for other political parties to join the coalition.
We have committed ourselves to talk with all those who say they are opposed to the current government, and we have said, let us come together. Anyone who will not be with us by the time we get to 2018 will be because they have excluded themselves, not because we have excluded them.
These sentiments were echoed by MKD leader Simba Makoni, who contested as an independent presidential candidate in 2008.
We are saying today we are making a commitment to work together. That is the important message.
Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti, who now leads the People's Democratic Party and attended the signing ceremony, said his political formation would join the coalition once he gets the nod from his party's executive committee.
We are going to go to the General Council in the next few weeks and then we'll come there. But we've been part of the negotiating process.
Changrai's MDCT says it was not invited for the signing ceremony. However, the main opposition party spokesperson, Obet Gutu, said the MDCT was willing to work with all pro-democracy parties and groups in a grand coalition that would challenge ZANU-PF's rule come 2018.
What I can just advise listeners for now is that as the MDC, our party leader, Dr. Morgan Tsvangirai, is actually the one who is leading us in the process or the processes around coalition.
Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, also known as JMEC, is accusing South Sudan's unity government of denying access to some members who are trying to carry out their work. JMEC chairman and former Botswana president Festus Mohai says members of the ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism were denied access in both the Greater Equatoria and Barigazel regions since last month. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports for VOA from Juba.
JMEC chairman Mohai says government authorities must abide by the provision of the agreement that calls for an impeded freedom of movement and access for citizen members.
I'm aware of the challenges citizens still faces in verifying the presence of IO forces in Western Bahr El Ghazal and Equatorial region. I regret that there has been another denial of access at the MBO for monitoring and verification team by local authorities, even though letters were sent to the JMCC to ensure that all government authorities in the MBO are informed of the deployment of the monitoring and verification team. I also regard the detention of the monitoring and verification team leader by local authorities in Torit as unhelpful and disturbing, to say the least.
CITISAM is the body responsible for monitoring compliance on the progress of the implementation of the permanent ceasefire and transitional security arrangements. Its members report directly to JMEC. South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuaid denies the government has restricted the movement of peace monitors and challenged JMEC to provide details and evidence of any restrictions.
They have been directed to present very clear, elaborate report to the TIGONO so that the TIGONO can take whatever action against anybody who obstructs such things. These reports and generalities are not acceptable, So they have been directed to present a joint written report clearly stating where things went wrong and who is obstructing, so that we direct and take necessary action against anybody.
Mohai says the transitional government must also concentrate on ways to revamp the nation's economy.
Addressing the economic and financial crisis facing South Sudan is a major priority and a prerequisite for the successful implementation of the peace agreement. The government of South Sudan and the international partners have to embark on the reform program with a clear timeline to bring hope to and enable the people of South Sudan to enjoy the dividend of peace.
Makwei says improving the economy is not a priority right now.
You cannot talk about economy at a time when you don't have peace. You cannot talk about development when you don't have peace. The most important thing at present is security. Once you are secure, other issues will address themselves. So our main task now is how best do we bring peace and stability to our people. Then next we will be talking of other issues, but not now. You cannot build Rome in one day.
Recent media reports indicate that political parties have not agreed on how to share the 17 seats allocated to them, as stipulated in the peace agreement. Makwei insists progress has been made because the political parties have now agreed on how to share the remaining parliamentary seats.
The political parties have agreed and they have come up with the mechanism for the sharing of the 17 seats of the parliament. And so maybe by today or by tomorrow, they will present the list of their nominees to His Excellency the President for issuance of a decree appointing them in those places.
JMEC's next meeting is set for June 23rd. Several international organizations and governments have criticized government officials for dragging their feet on reforms. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rakarinj in Juba.
Tunisia's moderate Islamist Ennahdha Party says it is separating its religious and political activities in a broader bid to mark its so-called Muslim democratic identity. The move appears to open a new chapter for a party that bounced back from the political wilderness of Tunisia's pre-revolution days to become a key player in the country and a member of the current coalition government. From Tunis, Lisa Bryant takes a look at how Tunisians are viewing the party's latest step.
A lavish party congress this month in Tunisia's resort town of Hammamet. Not just a feel-good moment for Ennahdha's base, but the start of a new direction for Tunisia's moderate Islamists, separating its political and religious activities.
Well, it means that Ennahdha, it's a civic party with an Islamic background, but it is a political party like any other political parties in a democratic country.
The change means elected officials can no longer hold religious and civic positions at the same time. Party leaders like Abdeslam say the split will help Ennahdha to better focus on issues like turning around Tunisia's battered economy and high unemployment. That's the kind of message many Tunisians want to hear, even those skeptical of Ennahdha.
We hope Ennahdha will do things, that they will think about Tunisia and Tunisians. I want someone who will make this country work.
Trade union leader Wydad Bouchamaoui, one of last year's Nobel Peace Prize winners, is also waiting to see what Ennahdha will deliver.
And politics. We need to separate between religion and politics because we need to be, to be like other countries, but also to be proud about our religion.
Others don't trust Ennahdha, which failed to boost the economy or initially crack down on radical Islamists during its stint as the first post-revolution government.
Ennahdha is really backwards. It doesn't look to the future.
So the party still needs to convince many Tunisians it's serious about its brand of Islamic democracy and exactly what that label really means. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Tunis.
The UN Refugee Agency is voicing concern at the rising death toll among refugees and migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea, especially along the route from Libya to Italy. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
More than 200,000 refugees and migrants have crossed the Mediterranean Sea in the first 6 months of this year. The UN Refugee Agency reports some 2,510 lives have been lost so far, compared to 1,825 in the same period last year, making this a particularly deadly year. While nearly two-thirds have reached Europe traveling from Turkey to Greece, the UNHCR says the North Africa-Italy route is dramatically more dangerous. It says the vast majority, more than 2,100 people, have died along this route this year. This past week has been particularly deadly. A series of shipwrecks on the Mediterranean reportedly have claimed at least 880 lives. The UNHCR considers this estimate to be conservative. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says boats leaving from Libya are terribly overcrowded, putting people's lives at risk. He says smugglers reportedly are increasing the number of people on board ship to maximize income before the start of the holy month of Ramadan in the coming week.
At the moment, smugglers are packing people on boats that are barely seaworthy and that in many cases are not meant to make the crossing. So what happens is that as soon as they depart from the shore, they call for rescue, and then the rescue services come and rescue them. In fact, it's a race against time to get there before these boats sink, and in some occasions, they get there too late.
Passengers are believed to be paying smugglers up to $2,000 to travel from Libya to Italy. The UNHCR says Nigerians and Gambians constitute the main nationalities on this route, although increasingly more are coming from Somalia and Eritrea. It says not many Syrians, Afghans, or Iraqis are shifting from the Turkey-Greece route to the central Mediterranean one from North Africa to Italy. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're also listening now for this Wednesday morning, June 1st.
It is very unfortunate that the poor masses in Nigeria are not celebrating democracy as claimed. The starvation, hardship, high cost of living, greed, corruption, to mention but a few. Those in authority need to sit up before a total collapse of the nation. As Ashfusha from Obanuku in Ogudu Katoranj was in Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Police in southern Nigeria say seven people were killed late Monday in a clash between officers and protesters calling for restoration of the former breakaway nation of Biafra. The police chief of Delta State, Usman Bala Akali, told a reporter for VOA's Hausa service that the sides exchanged fire after police tried to stop the marchers from crossing a major bridge spanning the Niger River and connecting the two sides of Asaba and Onitsha. And that's it for this Wednesday, June 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.